How's it going, Reef Keepers? It has been a minute. This is such a disjointed podcasting season for me, and I know I always start out every episode with like a bunch of apologies, but I do apologize. I wish that my schedule and the unique constraints I was faced with, with teaching this semester, had, I don't know, just, I wish it had shaken out differently, and I had been able to turn out, like, weekly or bi-weekly podcast episodes, like I did in season one, at least for, like, the second half of season one, but it has just not worked out that way, and I've decided that, you know, instead of spending time every episode apologizing for that kind of stuff, I'm just not going to make promises anymore, because obviously, you know, life raising, first grader and trying to address all the new challenges that come with, you know, moving up the ladder at work and just everything else. I mean, you guys know, if you follow my platform at all, that I have gone very, very hard on investigating and spreading information on the JCOD DMP magnetic wave maker recently. So that actually, you know, the limited time that I have to put into the hobby and to put into socials for the hobby, most of it has been directed at getting the word out about the JCOD DMP and helping people troubleshoot and learn the app and, you know, all kinds of stuff related to that. And I found, in weighing out my options between making podcast episodes and doing that, I thought that doing that and focusing on that, on the DMP, would be more valuable to the hobby overall. So that's where I really pushed my efforts there for a while. But we are getting to a point where, like, you know, I've done pretty significant exploration on that. I have exploration left to go. I have accessories for the DMP left to investigate. I have all kinds of stuff left, but it's all like cleanup work, you know? And so we're at a point now where, like, I can start to sort of split my time investment and get back to some of the other avenues that, you know, I have established over the course of me building whatever it is that I've built. My quote-unquote platform feels super weird to say, but yeah, I can kind of start looking back at other things that I have neglected over the last month or two. So here I am. We're back. And I have, so the subject matter that I have today feels very important. And I kind of sort of covered this in my recent podcast episode about the Vortech and the DMP and, like, what it could mean for Ecotech that the DMP was coming out. In retrospect, that episode was very reactionary. I need to be less reactionary. I need to sit with things after they happen for a while. I always feel like with my podcast, I need to be like Mr. Breaking News, and I need to not do that, I think, because I had some inaccuracies in there. For instance, I thought that Ecotech had really only had the Vortech around for like 10 years. So I said that multiple times. It's been 20 full years that's been around. So, like, you know, the benefit is me getting the news out quick. The detriment of getting the news out quick for me is that I haven't sat with everything and fully thought it through and fully researched it yet. And therefore, I'm literally like spinning inadvertently inaccuracies. And actually, I was giving Ecotech too much credit there. way too much. So, yeah, I'm going to, from now on, kind of take the approach of, before I go out there and blow my mouth, I need to slow down and fully digest information and reach out to various sources and confirm things if I possibly can and do the research required to, you know, to, be deserving of an audience, quite frankly. So apologies for, there's been plenty of inaccuracies over the course of my time doing this. Apologies for all of them, and apologies for the recent ones. There's just, it was an exciting moment when that DMP came out, at least for me. So, but we're going to focus on the bigger story, the greater context surrounding this whole magnetic aquarium pump subject matter. And I think that the greater context surrounding it really, really adds a lot of nuance and understanding to all of the happenings that have gone on with this product category and the high tension surrounding it and the contentiousness of, you know, discussing it on socials or making videos about it. Or, you know, there's so much, it's just this subject matter more than other gear categories feels bigger, if that makes sense. Maybe it does to you guys, maybe it is just me, but it feels bigger than other categories. So let's get into it. And I want to start at the very beginning. We will start at the beginning with the story of the magnetic aquarium pump. But first, I want to lay something out that I've been thinking about a lot lately. I've been thinking, so when I look at like Aperture, which is to say Ecotec, AI, Neptune, BRS, Aperture to me, it's confusing to me that people, even some people who are quite aware of, like, you know, what the direction they've gone and what they're doing and how much they've jacked prices and how they limit and lock behind paywalls, like product paywalls, different features like Wi-Fi, like simple Wi-Fi. There are people who are totally aware of this kind of thing, and yet they not only just continue to buy Aperture at a terrible value in most cases, they will sometimes even defend Aperture. Like, you know, even somebody who's not like, you know, a taker of free Vortex who has thousands of Instagram followers. I'm talking about like regular Joes will like come out there and at least passively defend Aperture and their products. And there's all kinds of things that go into that. Like, you know, well, they, you know, they're just a phone call away if anything goes wrong. Or, you know that, like, you know, you can actually talk to someone who speaks English when you call, you know, within that 1 year warranty period. Jeez, oh, Pete, the 1 year warranty. I won't start. Or like, you know, well, it makes me feel good because it's made in America, which we've covered before. It's not. It's all Chinese parts. They are snapped together in a facility in Pennsylvania. So, and literally the branding on their products is accurate in that it states assembled in America, right? Assembled, which means snapped and bolted or screwed together. And, but you still hear like passively, like among just, you know, regular Aperture folk or Aperture loyalists, made in America. Like they transform what the meaning of that assembled in America to made in America. So I hear this sometimes, and I have decided that kind of rhetoric coupled with the great story that once was like these companies like BRS, Ecotec, Neptune, I don't know how the origin story of AI, but the like upstart guys who, you know, went out there and found this niche category and like, you know, built these thriving businesses into that space, and Ryan Batchelor as Reef Jesus that's going to save us all, and, you know, all this, all of that, what that is, now that I've had like a couple years of, you know, really looking critically at Aperture, what all that represents, all these little, you know, all like the story of Ecotech starting, you know, with them getting pedicures and, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could, you know, have a pump in the pedicure tub that didn't have a wire in there so that it was safe. Oh, you know, all these little, you know, just snippets and stories and legends, and it all combines to create what I would call the Aperture mythos. And I've come to believe that the vast majority of, like, common reefer Aperture loyalists, these people who confuse me, where I'm like, why are you, like, defending them? Like, I don't get it. You know, why do you think that the, I mean, and again, like, value to me is not what it is to somebody else. Somebody might really, like, make themselves believe. I shouldn't say it that way. That's a jerk way to say it, make themselves believe. But someone might actually, like, have that much, put that much value in, there are people in America snapping things together. Or I do know that someone will pick up the phone from 8 to 5 in PA when I call. There are people out there who put so much value into that stuff that really it might, paying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of dollars more for products, might really, like, that might be justified to them. So I don't mean to, like, put anybody down. If that's part of your, like, you know, set of principles that you base your purchases on, like, okay, if you're really one of those hardliners about this kind of thing, like, okay. But I still feel like there's, that's not the case for most people. And I think most people would probably just say that stuff to try to justify it to themselves after the fact, or when their products are challenged. Because when you buy a product that is hundreds and hundreds, thousands of dollars, to have someone come in and, like, you know, throw some reality on it and be like, hey, you know, you could have gotten, like, a lot, like, for instance, like an XR30, okay? An XR30 is a relatively weak light for the $1,000 price tag. It doesn't come with a mounting kit. You have to buy all the mounting components that add up to, like, whatever, $150+. You get 1 year warranty on it. And if you want to make it, like, a tighter spread so that it's not, you know, so weak, you have to buy a kit to change it, you know, versus, like, getting a ReFi Uno 2.0 Pro for $480 with a 3 year warranty on it that is legitimately stronger than an XR30, like, puts out more intensity with ease, and in my opinion, has better spectrum. So, like, when I look at those two things, I'm just, it's people who would in general stand there and be like, no, 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 the Radeon XR30 is the better light, the better value. I think a lot of those people are, they've bought the XR30. They don't like that someone's challenging this massive expenditure that they chose to make based on marketing hype. And they knee-jerk defend not really the company, but kind of themselves, right? Because at the end of the day, what they're buying this on, yeah, it's part, you know, it's not like it's a bad product. One, it's not a bad product. I just think it's a bad value. It's not a bad product. It works. Two, the marketing. I mean, they bought it because of the just absolute onslaught of nonstop, you know, Aperture, BRS, Ecotech marketing machine that is just clobbering this hobby on a daily basis with an army of, you know, bought out reef keepers, influencers, shillfluencers who are just battering everyone all the time with this. The thing, though, I think that is the main driver, even beyond that stuff just, the fact that it works and the fact that there are shillfluencers out there shilling it all the time, that just feeds into this real reason that people keep buying Aperture and then being willing to defend them, even with, like, logic staring them in the face, telling them that it's not as good of a value as what you paid. I think that it's the mythos, right? And they're the mythology that surrounds the Aperture brands has been, like, I think, like, the cornerstone of them being able to achieve, you know, consistent sales for so long. And I think that it's finally starting to crack. I think it's been cracking for a while. I think it started, you know, I don't know exactly when. But I think that it, at some point after the Aperture takeover, you know, maybe it was Ryan leaving, maybe, I don't know. The veneer began to crack. And I think more and more people by the month, by the year, are starting to, you know, see them for what they are. But ultimately, there are so few people that, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I talk about this industry and I talk about gear by and large, like 80% of the time. Do you know how few people care about the industry and gear on this level? Like, not many. Not many people are critically thinking this through or being skeptical or anything. All they know is all the cool reefers I see on Instagram are using Radions or Vortex. And so, like, that's what I'm buying because they use it and they have banging tanks and they told me I should. And BRS is cool and Ryan Batchelor, I watched 52 Weeks of Reefing and, like, all this, you know, again, the mythos, right? And the whole operation to prop that up. And then, again, when they see logic or logic is thrown at them, they get defensive because they're like, well, then why did I spend $3,500 to $4,000 on a few XR30s to put over my tank? You know, if all this is true, then I'm dumb. Like, I feel dumb. And that doesn't fly. That doesn't jive with most people. By the way, I'm not just sitting here calling people, like, dumb, like, to be a jerk. I was that guy. You guys all know this if you're a close follower. I literally was like Mr. posting pictures of my Radions and, you know, hyping it all up and super excited and, you know, oh, maybe one day they'll pick me and I'll get a free Vortec. Like, I was that guy because it's all I saw. That's all I ever saw was that stuff. And I'm like, all these awesome reef tanks with these experienced reefers behind them, they're all using this stuff. Like, there's a clear gold standard. That's what I must have. I was bought into the mythos. I own like 17 Mr. Chili plushies. My buddies in the reef keeping hobby laugh about it on a routine basis. And I laugh with them because, I mean, that's, you don't buy 17 Mr. Chili plushies unless you have bought into the mythology of the brand. And that's, I was hook, line, and sinker, man. I mean, it's just all the way. So I want to establish that there is this false mythos. Like, Aperture is not the mythos. Like, the mythos and Aperture does not deserve the mythology behind brands that once were these incredible houses of innovation and light in the reef keeping hobby, like Ecotec, Neptune, BRS. There was a time when these entities were cities on hills, so to speak. They really were. They were so, even if they were a little bit expensive, they were so innovative and they were so cutting edge and, you know, hyper competitive in the industry and in the, like, for the world. Like, I mean, not just America. I mean, these were brands that people from other countries sought out because they were so, they had such storied meaning. And they earned it. I mean, they went out there and earned it. They worked at it. And that, like, since Aperture's taken over, the innovation has just utterly died. The pricing has gone through the absolute roof. Now, granted, I'm not sitting here saying, like, you know, they don't deserve to raise prices because of inflation. But the pricing is just bonkers. And at some point, you know, now again, they have venture capital behind them. And some wealthy venture capitalists for whom Aperture is this tiny little, you know, sliver of their pie, they don't, like, care about the niche reef keeping hobby and, like, what pricing and value and stuff mean to us. They care about the numbers. They're like, you know, like, these numbers need to be right every time we don't care what it takes. And the answer to get the numbers where they need to be for the big wealthy venture capitalists in New York City is we're going to not innovate. We're not spending any more money on R&D. We are going to lower the quality of our customer service. We're not going to expand our warranties. We're going to just jack prices consistently over and over. And what money's left, we're going to dump into marketing to ensure that we have an absolute army of bought out people who are blanketing the hobby with our rhetoric all the time and our products. So that, and again, there are people out there, people have argued with me that they don't have a problem with that. Other brands do it. Why are you picking on Aperture? And I'm picking on Aperture because I really deeply care about this hyper niche hobby. And I look at it and I see the Aperture is using the mythology that was like the legendary stories of these various brands to build their house on, their decrepit house that they just like a cheap landlord when you're buying efficiency or renting efficiency apartments in college. One tenant moves out and they just slap white paint. Oh, they take a paint roller and just paint roll everything. Light switches, stairs, railings, doors, walls. I mean, I lived in a house that literally had like a hallway that was painted white because the scrapes on the hardwood were too bad. No, we're not going to reseal that. We're just going to white paint it. Like, that is Aperture, in my opinion. They are the cheap landlord that comes in and just paints everything over, cakes on another thick layer of paint to cover everything up. That's how it feels. That's like the value I feel I'm getting. Like, you walk into that house and you're like, what am I paying, you know, $1,500 a month for? Like, this is literally the least amount of effort that had to go into like maintaining this house. And that's what their house like feels like to me. So, but they rely on that mythos. So I wanted to establish that the notion of this mythos or mythology behind them, and then kind of deconstruct it for you as it relates specifically to the magnetic aquarium pump. So now I'm ready to start, by the way. I'm sorry to have gone on like a 10-minute, you know, Let me go into all this, like, you know, meta shit about, you know, mythos or whatever. Like, just bear with me. So, by the way, sorry I cursed. I try not to curse. Kids might be listening to this in the background. My bad. But basically, I'm going to call this category the magnetic aquarium pump because the man who actually invented the magnetic aquarium pump called it that. Because the person who invented the magnetic aquarium pump was not any of those guys at Ecotec. They were not the ones who invented it. And I have heard my whole time in this hobby that Ecotec invented the wet side, dry side, magnetically driven aquarium pump. I have heard that again and again. Like, the Vortec was an invention in concept. Like, they were the origin point. I believed it without question because there's nothing else like it that you can find, right? And I think most people are that way. They're like, it's the only one, or it was until, you know, until recently with the DMP. But I think most people would have assumed that. And I think that, like, you know, they can't be faulted for assuming that because the true story takes some digging. But fortunately, I was a history minor. I do love history, and I know how to research. So I turned on that part of my brain and knocked the rust off, and I went looking. And what I found was really, really interesting. The magnetic aquarium pump, as we know it, you know, if I had to describe it, I'd say it's a magnetically driven wave maker with a wet side, dry side design. That was absolutely positively not invented by Ecotec. It was invented by an incredible individual that went by the name of Mervyn F. Roberts. Mervyn F. Roberts invented this, or at least patented it, in the late 60s. And if you go on Instagram, I'm Kalamazoo Reefer at Instagram as well. If you go on Instagram and scroll back a ways, you can see where I posted images of the patent that Mervyn F. Roberts established on what he called the magnetic aquarium pump, which is what I'm going to call it. So it is remarkable to look at. His drawings, the renderings, either that he did or had done for this thing, are remarkable in their direct similarity to the Ecotec Vortec. They are stunning. You have a dry side, which is a motor that's on the outer part of the tank, just like a Vortec, with a cord coming in the top, just like a Vortec. And on the other side, you have a wet side. It didn't have like the cage mechanism. The one that he designed had like a flow outlet on it so that it would, you know, drive magnetically the impeller inside of it. And then you could actually like direct the flow out of a nozzle. But underneath that nozzle on top of it is basically just a Vortec without a cage. I mean, it is... You look at it and, like, at first glance, you might be like, is that, like, an early prototype of the Vortec? Like, yeah, it is the magnetic aquarium pump. Like, this man created it and specifically called out its application in aquariums. He created this. So the whole concept of, like, I looked at the patent references on Mr. Roberts' patent, and the patent references reference... like industrial magnetic mixing components. And like, maybe I think I saw like a household appliance that for a while there was using this like magnetic coupling to drive itself. So the concept of like the magnetically driving with a motor on the outside and then on the inside of a container or box or whatever, you know, having a magnetically coupled piece that was driven by that motor on the outside, that was around, but not for that long. I think that those references only went back into like the 40s. So it makes sense that like during wartime, we probably would have had some unique applications that we needed to develop a way to have this capability. And a lot came out of that period. The 40s, a lot was invented, clearly. I mean, talking like Manhattan Project stuff going on. So yeah. We generated some pretty amazing stuff during that period. And I think that, you know, if I had to guess, and he's not around anymore, unfortunately, I think he lived to be like 102 years old, but it'd be my guess that either Mr. Roberts encountered this in action somewhere, or he had the concept and then reached out and figured out, hey, you know, this is a thing and this is how it's working elsewhere. And then he generated he generated a way to shrink it down and put it on an actual aquarium. So what he did, because, and I don't know, it might have been that at the time, there was not a way to get strong enough magnets easily, but he had a little like bracket that came out of the top of the, like a bracket that was flush to the glass on both sides and attached to the top of the wet side and the dry side, and came up and over the lip of the aquarium. So imagine attaching like a U-shaped like piece of acrylic to the wet side and dry side of a Vortec, and then hanging those components so that they were flush to the glass, but there was a bracket piece at the top that supported it. That's what he developed. That was his way of mounting the product on the aquarium. The exceptional difference, and I will give Ecotec, I give credit where credit is due. Ecotec, you know, all these years later, when they, you know, when they didn't come up with the idea, but did come up with a way to mount it that I think is better than the way that Mervyn F. Roberts had available to him at the time, when they did this, they were like, how can we do this without this bracket thing getting in the way? I mean, we have like probably the advent of rimless tanks was upon us. Maybe it was the rim on the tank that they were trying to avoid, like, you know, the plastic rim at the time back in 2004 when they developed the Vortex. So like, they were like, we got to do this without this bracket because we can't make this bracket thing one size fits all. And what they ended up doing was using the much better and more available magnet technology of our era to make it so that the Vortec could have a bracketless coupling. So in all of Ecotec's patents, you see this word bracketless, 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 constantly and endlessly pushed, because that is, it's not, I mean, Mervyn F. Roberts' patent had expired. Let's make that clear. But that was the unique differentiator that they, that Ecotec hung their hat on, was we're bracketless. And that is unique. And that is, you know, they, again, we had this magnet technology around where we could suspend things via strong magnets, you know, on a piece of glass or what have you. But they did figure out a way to do that. So credit where credit's due. Pretty cool. But Mervyn F. Roberts not ever getting any of the credit. You ever hear any of the, when those brilliant quote unquote inventors at Ecotec are talking about the story of their product and sitting in the pedicure place and blah, blah, blah. When they're talking about all that stuff and they're, you know, lauding the origins of the Vortec and all this, you ever hear them mention Mervyn F. Roberts? Because I don't. Ever. And I know they know he exists because their patents reference his. And he literally called his invention the magnetic aquarium pump. And it has an almost identical design. And Mervyn F. Roberts specifically calls for its use in aquarium application. So it's not like another patent reference where like maybe they reference an industrial mixer or something like that, where like there would be no need for them to give those people any credit when they tell their story. I think that Mervyn F. Roberts, this is a unique situation where this man has been stripped of due credit, and knowingly stripped of due credit. So I'm going to read to you guys. So I reached out to the people who run his, like, I don't know what you would call it, kind of what remains of his estate and his, like, memorial, I guess, because he was such a giant in this community of Old Lyme, Connecticut. That is the community he chose when he came back from doing military service. He moved him and his wife there to be close to the ocean and be among like-minded people. And he was such an accomplished and incredible man. In talking to those people, I think that he was such an accomplished and incredible guy that it actually, like, and you bear with me for this, all right? I'll read it quickly. Don't tune out while I read it, but I'm going to read a piece of his obituary just because I would spend multiple episodes talking about this man. And what I've learned looking up information on him, I would spend multiple episodes on it. I mean, that's how deep I could dive. What compresses who he was into the most digestible bit of information is actually his obituary, where it literally lists like everything they could remember that he was and did. And I'm going to read you that part of it so that you understand that the individual that we never got to meet, who is the true inventor and father of the magnetic aquarium pump. Sorry, allow me to read this, if you will. So Merv was born. So Merv is what they called him. Merv was born in New York City in 1922. He was a naval officer during World War II. He served in the Navy for 4 years and then in the reserve. He was awarded 4 campaign medals, 2 with combat stars. After his service, he returned to complete a degree in ceramic engineering at Alfred University. He served as a merchant marine officer, scout master, and commissioner. Town Shellfish Commissioner, Water Pollution Control Commissioner, Sunday School Teacher, Counselor to the Governor of Connecticut for Marine Resources, Selectman of the Town of Old Lyme, Chaplain of the Fire Department, and Justice of the Peace. He was also a consultant of aquaculture worldwide and was a counselor to two bishops in South India concerning animal husbandry for women to alleviate poverty. For years, he was the tender of the gate at the Old Lyme Cemetery. He was awarded the Town of Old Lyme Citizen of the Year and included in American Men of Science and conferred the American Legion's Legionnaire of the Year in 2015. He was a teacher and lecturer, gunsmith, inventor, pioneer photographer of high-speed animal movement, waterman, duck hunter, and last but not least, he got his hair cut at Sekla's Old Lyme Barbershop. Merv wrote 50 books and pamphlets on pets, natural history, and animal husbandry, and he and his wife, Edith, raised 6 wonderful and successful children. Okay, like, by the way, this goes on and on and on, going into detail. I'm not going to, again, like, it would take me half an episode to read the obit and go through it. It would take multiple episodes to go through all that I have uncovered about this man's incredible life. And in talking to the people who, again, run his, like, estate or memorial, the what's left of him, they indicated to me that there's no telling with regards to this prototype. Like, there was a prototype, but it could have been sold in the estate. It could be with one of his children or grandchildren. It could be collecting dust in, you know, some back corner somewhere. Apparently this man invented so many things. Almost all of it relating to, like, aquaculture and pet keeping and stuff like that. That there's literally, they're like, basically, if we find it, like, we'll send you photographs of it. You know, we will absolutely reach back out, because these people really cared about this man, and they're really trying to curate everything that's left of him and somehow sort through a life that is objectively larger than most people lead. I mean, that is an astounding life. And I just gave you a snapshot of it. So this man, this great man, literally developed the magnetic aquarium pump. Obviously, you know, probably didn't pursue it for monetary gain. And frankly, it's in researching him, it seems like very little he pursued for monetary gain. He didn't seem very interested in that. He seemed interested in living a good life and living a life that gave back and was productive for human society, not just for, you know, not just for his family, not just for one community. Like, he truly wanted to leave a lasting impact in whatever way he was useful on humanity itself and not do it for massive profit. And that is so different than the world that we exist in now. Like, an individual like that, I know they're still out there, but what was the last individual like that you encountered? And when you think back to that generation, you know, he was born in, I think it said, let me take a look here. He was born in 1922. I said that earlier. So 1922, my grandparents were born around then. So greatest generation. When you think back to the greatest generation and you contrast it with the leaders of today, doesn't it seem to you that they were much more about the togetherness of society and the collective common good? I'm at the risk of tangenting for a moment. Isn't it kind of a shame that everywhere you turn now, there's somebody trying to jam their hand in your pocket some new subscription fee, some new app you need to download so they can advertise to you, some new email list that you need to be on for a newsletter, which is really just a bunch of advertisements, you know, some new person claiming, you know, they invented this or that, or building some false mythology around them. Everything now, everything it seems, is all the individual. Everything is for only each individual now. How can you make the most money for yourself? Everything in our society is geared around this reality that this nation has, you know, taken on at some point in our national history. I don't know how we got so far away from the greatest generation to where we are now. It is, quite frankly, it's kind of disgusting to me and depressing that all anybody thinks about is, what can I get? What, you know, how can I make a profit from this? That's all it all is now. I mean, everywhere I look, I'll be honest with you. I have never met somebody like Mervyn F. Roberts. And I'm not saying that there were that many Mervyn F. Roberts, but there were many people who shared his, in that generation, who shared his striving effort to have a society that was a society that operated with cohesion and collective effort and a sense of togetherness and a sense of, like, you know, you don't have to do it all on your own, or it's not just you on an island against everybody else. It's all of us, like, and we're, and all of us want you to succeed. So you should want all the rest of us to succeed too. We should all be working towards something together. That mentality has so largely left society that I struggle to point to, even among the people that I deeply love and care about in my life, there are more people who are like, No, it's about what each man can get for himself. There are way more people like that, even among the people that I deeply love, than there are people who are like, oh yeah, it's about all of us. Like, you know, we should be trying to make the world better, or at least our country better, or about, you know, we should be trying to make it just our community better, like just our little community, and that will make everything else better by default. I struggle to think of anybody who thinks like that, who just, like, carries that on their shoulder when they walk out the door every day and interacts with other people. And it kind of ties back into my episode about, at the end of season one, about the loss of the third place. It has the same vibe to me, where we are in a different place, and it's a worse place. In my opinion, I mean, you might be one of those individual people. It's all about you, you know, not, you know, the kind of people who asked the country to think about, ask not what you can do for your country, or ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Now it's inverted to ask what your country can do for you, for your profit, for your advancement only. It's all about just you and whoever you choose to include in your little circle, if anyone. That shift in mentality is what leads, in my opinion, that's what's directly led to things like Aperture existing, where they just don't care about people. They don't care about this, you know, little noble hobby trying to make it. They don't care about that. They don't care about that in any way. They answer to hyper wealthy, everything is about the individual venture capitalists that you're never going to see behind some curtain at the top of a high rise in New York City. That's who they care about giving returns to. They're not going to give a penny of returns, not an inch of return, to the common reefer unless they are forced to do it. And that plays out over and over and over and over and over again in society, where there is not an by those in power, there's not an inch of ground they are willing to give to the common person unless there is something in it for them. And whatever's in it for them better damn well be many times, you know, greater than what the little guy's going to get if they have to make any kind of concession or value that they give to the little man. That, to me, that all the consternation that is, you know, playing out day over day, and all the people feeling lost and depressed and not having a third place and not feeling like they're part of anything, desperately looking for some identity, some movement to be a part of. All of that, to me, is what happens when you've brought your society to a point where all the powers that be, and heck, people who aren't even powerful. I know people who aren't powerful at all who are like, it's all about me. It's all about my profit. They think that they're like some, you know, some big mover and shaker, and they're not. It's like, why do you think that way? When you have that as your like national baseline, I don't know how you succeed long term, is what I'm saying. I just don't. And you can hear my Neptune, ironically, my Neptune auto feeder. You probably hear that going off right now. I hope the noise cancellation is good enough that you don't have to hear it. But there's an example of we're not giving an inch. Like, you can just look product by product. There's a product where they refuse to fix the obnoxious grinding freight train in your living room noise that thing gives off, and they're still charging. I mean, I bought that thing when it was like $80. Like, I don't know, are they charging over $100 for it now? It wouldn't shock me. So when you refuse to give anything, the powers that be refuse to give anything, I feel like it falls apart, and it's not going to all collapse tomorrow. It's just going to gradually fall apart until it weakens and fragments out. And Ecotech, even back when they were, you know, their own, you know, they're under their own ownership, I looked up to that company. I thought that's amazing. And just the fact that they have a, you know, museum area in their facility. I don't know if you guys have watched like old Ecotech videos ever, but they've shown their, you know, their history out there. Like, to me, it speaks to this whole selfish mentality that this country has about itself now, that you wouldn't have one little section of that, like little memorial museum or whatever for past Ecotech products. You wouldn't have right at the start of it, like, look here, here's this great man, Mervyn F. Roberts, who pioneered this concept and built himself a little prototype once upon a time. And we at Ecotech proudly take up what he began, and we found a way to do it that was easier and better and mass producible so that we could take his brilliant idea and bring it to the reef keeping hobby. That wasn't important enough for you because, like, you wanted that credit all for yourself to generate your own mythos and make it all about you, just like everything else. So, and that's not going to change under Aperture. It's not, you would never hear about this guy under Aperture. So, I don't know, guys. I feel like I'm meandering. I apologize. A little off track there. The risk of tangenting was real. I definitely tangented down a dark alley there. But it saddens me. It genuinely does. It genuinely saddens me when I discover stuff like this. So yeah, Mervyn F. Roberts, thank you, sir, for the magnetic aquarium pump. Thank you. Pretty incredible product. And now we all get to have it for way cheaper than we would otherwise have it because JBow/Jakad has generated their version of the magnetic aquarium pump. So, and I say their version because I've come to believe that, you know, it's probably wrong of me to have called this thing, probably wrong of me to have called it the Vortech clone. You know, some of that is a little bit of wanting people to understand, hey, this pump is not, you know, Like, this is literally the same deal as far as its function, where it connects through glass and is magnetically driven. Probably, you know, being somewhat of a professional wordsmith, I probably should have come up with something better to call it than the Vortec clone. But when you say Vortec clone, everybody knows what you're talking about. So in my defense, at least everybody knew what was being referenced when I started looking into the DMP on a deep level. I now own six of these, by the way. I own six Jakad DMPs, and every one of them has worked. We're going to talk about it, you know, at greater length here as this episode goes on. And you know, I mean, I can't believe that we're 50 minutes into this episode. That's remarkable to me. I wonder if I should break this up. I'm sorry to be doing this right in the middle of the episode. You know what? I paused it and I made coffee. I just paused it. I know it seemed like no time at all to you, but I paused it, made coffee, drank some coffee, and I've decided I'm just going to name this episode The Story of the Magnetic Return Pump, or close to it. And I'm going to elaborate on the rest of the history here. So in whatever, you know, early 2000s, at some point, to hear them tell it, the Ecotech boys were getting pedicures, and I'm not judging them on the pedicures, it's such a quirky story. So they came up with the idea for having a magnetic pump, a magnetically driven pump, that was on a foot tub that's used in pedicure places, because they noticed that there were, you know, water movement pumps that were in these things, but they had cords going into the water. So this is I think Patrick is his name. Seems like a nice enough guy. He was on a Reef Builders, a Reef Therapy episode a while back, and went into a little bit of this. But, you know, they were like, all right, how can we do this, you know, in that space, in the foot spa, the tub spa space? So they generated this, you know, magnetically driven pump that attaches to, I think they might even have a custom made tub for it. I'm not sure. I've never seen that product. I'm sure it's not just like a Vortec we'd put on our aquarium. I'm sure it's different in design, but like same principle, right? Same basic principle. So then they translated this technology, because one of them at least was a reef keeper or an aquarist, maybe just saltwater fish or whatever. And they were like, well, this could work on aquariums too. So it was presumably at that point when they started poking around that they would have come across Mervyn F. Roberts' design and his patent. Again, because it's referenced. So with that, you know, being able to, like, having that resource, they were able to go, okay, we have the foundation. How can we improve on it? And like I said earlier, credit where credit's due. They did improve it, right? They improved it. They made it so that it could magnetically couple just by magnetism alone. They made it bracketless. So, you know, that's an innovation. Good job there. You know, I'll give him that much credit. And it was the only thing of its type that was available on the market. So they locked it down with the patent as quick as they could, like smart business people. I mean, that's, you know, within rights, right? Locked it down with the patent. And I don't really understand utility versus design patents. It seems strange to me that they got, by like base definitions that I read, it seems strange that they got a utility patent rather than a design patent. I think design patents are like 10 years, utility patents are 20. But anyway, they got a utility patent somehow. So it was a 20-year long patent. They applied for that patent in like 2004, I believe. And again, patent paperwork, guys, like I should just say, when you look through this stuff, it is such a convoluted mess. The U.S. Patent Office, like with everything people complain about government, if they took one look at like the documentation that is at the U.S. Patent Office, I'm pretty sure that they would just like burn the place to the ground. Like, of people who hate government, if they saw that, they would just start screaming. because it is madness combing through records. There's so many, you know, versions and variants and adjustments, and just it's wild. It's safe to say, I think, that around 2004 they applied, and I think that they were granted the patent in like 2005 officially. I still can't determine. Again, I'm not an expert in the patent sphere. I'm good at looking things up. I'm not an expert in the patent sphere. I think that they were granted the patent in 2006, and I can't tell if it's from the filing date that you file or request the patent that you get the patent. Like, once it's approved, it starts from that request date, or if it starts from the day that it's actually granted. But regardless, they are essentially at, since we're talking about like 2004, 2005, on the original Vortec design, we are like 20 years in, or right around it, like running up on it quick. So they have not had any competition in the magnetic aquarium wet side, dry side pump space since that time. Like, they've just had no competition at all because they've had this patent locked down. And for whatever reason, it is interesting to me. I guess maybe Jabal just, you know, was getting better at what they did over the last couple decades, or they might not have understood how popular these could be or whatever. For whatever reason, or by the way, it's possible. Part of me likes to think that maybe Jabal is like, we're going to give them their 20 years. We're not going to take that away from them. We're going to give them about 20 years on this. Whenever they developed their own, they started prototyping out the DMP. They were like, we'll give them 20 years. And then it's go time. Because right at about the 20-year mark where we're at now, Jabal was like, all right, it's go time. And Aperture is absolutely flipping out about this. And they're flipping out because they got a patent extension to have this thing patented through like 2034. The Vortec, which is astonishing to me. So, in talking to some people who are familiar with patents, I've learned that, one, the patent world is just chaos. Like, it's just chaos, and a lot of times the only winners are the litigators at the end of the day, like the teams of lawyers and stuff, because it is such a just chaos fight over patents all the time. And it's super convoluted. It's confusing to basically everyone except patent lawyers, and probably still to them at sometimes too. And so what happened was, somehow, potentially because the U.S. Patent Office is so backed up that they're just approving everything that comes in. That's a possibility, by the way, I was told. Ecotech/Aperture was able to get a 10-year extension on the patent. So most people online, like, I'm sure you guys have seen the fights going on Facebook and Reef to Reef, and people are fighting about the Vortec, you know, fanboys versus basically everybody else who's like, this is way too expensive of a product. Essentially, it seems like everyone believes that the patent is like up, or like about to be up within months. That's not true. The patent is literally through 2034 because they got it extended. So basically, from what I can tell, Aperture really legitimately thought that they were going to be able to just probably extend this patent forever, at least in 10-year increments and for the foreseeable forever. And that they could just keep raising the price on the Vortec and not giving us any new features or innovations or, you know, reduction in, you know, dry side size or any other kind of benefit. And that if we wanted this unique, you know, design, we would just have to keep paying forever. And so when Jabal hit the go button on the DMP, I mean, if you're Aperture and you're going into it thinking, we got this cornered, and this is, you know, one of our bread and butter products that we're just making money hand over fist on, and that's never going to stop, And then Jabao's like, actually, here's the DMP. Good luck. Yeah, you'd probably be pretty angry too. And it's interesting to me that, you know, you get, I hear things when I'm, you know, talking to people in this hobby. And from what I hear, and from, by the way, what I see publicly, Aperture is fighting like a wounded animal in a corner right now about this. And I'm not going to say, like, I'm gonna stop short of gossip, all right? So I'm not going to say what I've heard is going on behind the scenes with, you know, Aperture and people who sell Aperture products and shops that sell Aperture products and all that. Because, again, it's hearsay, so I'm not going to go there. What I will say is publicly what we've seen is when Reef Builders covered the DMP and just covered its existence, like what it was, like how it functioned, whatever, in literally one article and then never really came back to it, Cade Szymanski, that's such a fun last name. I wish that was my last name, Szymanski. Cade Szymanski, who's like some Aperture, I don't know what he is, territory manager or marketing guy or whatever, responded to on the Reef Builders post on Facebook and was like, something to the effect of, you know, this is an illegal product and we're not going to, I know Aperture is not going to work with anybody who is, you know, covering illegal products, which to me feels an awful lot like pressuring a journalistic entity. Like, I mean, we know that Ecotech's a sponsor of Reef Builders. I mean, it seems to me like almost, you know, a threat tied to money. Like we're going to take that away. That's what that would seem like to me. Like fear tactics, right? Pretty shady, if you ask me. You can go on Telegram's Instagram and look up. He screenshotted the Cade Szymanski comment. It's pretty remarkable that, well, however he said it, I don't have it in front of me, but however he said it was, I mean, it's shady as heck. Super shady. Very much like a loyal soldier carrying out Order 66 kind of thing, for sure. Since then, and I can't, you know, I have no confirmation for sure. People are saying that it's confirmed, so it must be, but, well, that's not true. People are saying it's confirmed, because, and it seems like it is, because, Reef Builders is no longer running Ecotech's, like, whatever you call it, pre-roll advertisements on their videos. Seems like Aperture has pulled its support of Reef Builders. It's you know, advertising or financial support, whatever they, however that works. So that would indicate that they were mad enough about this that they yanked that. And then, interestingly, the DMP article that Reef Builders had up was recently updated with a disclaimer, like the text of everything is gone and it just has a single sentence disclaimer that says that it has been temporarily removed due to legal action. So you guys put the pieces together. Here comes Cade with like his ominous, threatening at least tone. And then the banner ads or the pre-roll ads get pulled. It's seldom that I've seen a Reef Builders video without Ecotech advertising at the beginning of it. And then the article that they had published gets updated with a disclaimer that states that legal action is why they had to take it down. I'm not going to make any claim about it. I'll just let you guys put together the dots. Just connect the dots on that one. Yeah. That's where Aperture's at, I think, which is, oh no, we haven't innovated on this product in forever. It's way overpriced. it represents a significant portion of our business. And we got fat and happy thinking that this patent was just going to be a forever thing. And it turns out it's not, because that's a ridiculous thing to think in the modern world. And now this is, instead of going, okay, guys, game plan, we need to innovate like crazy. How can we reduce the size of the Vortec? How can we make it, you know, quieter or more reliable, or seal the magnets better so they don't rust? Should we add Wi-Fi to the Vortec and just give it to them and everything else can be through the MXM? Like, should we lower the price? Should we knock the price down $75 maybe and make this a better value? Instead of any of those things going on, which is what the reaction should be, because we're in such a just place economically now as a society where the powers that be literally go out there with an expectation of not having to do anything to just continue making outrageous profit and just pillaging everyone under them, we're literally at a place where like their hubris is so bad that they're literally like, no, we're gonna stifle this competition in every conceivable way possible. Give the shills their marching orders and get on getting every shred of anywhere near official coverage of this taken down. I mean, that's where they're at. So again, it just plays into exactly what I said earlier. This is what we've allowed everything to be reduced to. There is no more nobility. It's gone. There's no honor. It's gone. They don't care. And it's not just them. It's across every sector, every industry, all of it. The people who run it and control it don't care about anyone else. And it shows. It shows everywhere you turn, every day. And it is an absolute travesty for me to see the country and our hobby the way that it is. It's unbelievable. So I'll quit talking about them now, and I'll talk about the hero none of us maybe exactly wanted, but the hero we have. Let's talk about the DMP, and let's talk about, like, you know, the DMP in probably some ways that I didn't really talk about it last time, because I don't even, in my previous, like, more reactionary episode about this content, like the Vortec, I think I didn't even have a DMP yet. So, I mean, I have six of them now. I've been through the DMP. Here's what I have found, okay? By the way, it's not all sunshine and roses, so I'm not going to sit here and be like, you know, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know? Just don't consider the Vortec whatsoever. You know, you should absolutely only get a DMP. You know, I mean, I think it's a way better value, but I'm not going to sit here and say it's perfect, this is what you should get, because that wouldn't be true. I'll give you the long and the short of the DMP. Where to start with this thing? We'll start at what I think is the weak point of it. The weak point, I would say, is the wet side of the DMP. And when I say weak point, like, I truly mean, like, the on its face definition, like, it's just it's the part of it that feels the least well constructed to me, but it's still totally functional. So, the wet side of the DMP, when you squeeze the cage versus, like, a Vortec cage, you can tell that there's less fit and finish. The plastic they use is probably not as premium. You know, it's definitely like you can shake them and you can feel the amount of play that the DMP has, which strangely over time, I was talking to somebody about this, it might result in, because there's extra play, it might result in a little bit more longevity out of the impeller components or whatever. It might. That's conjecture as far as I'm concerned, because I don't know. I'm not, you know, a mechanical engineer or anything like that, but or a product engineer, so I don't know. The But it, you can tell that overall, like the cage, so little things Ecotech thought about that Jabal just didn't. And the little things that are different make sense to me, overall, on the wet side, cheaper plastic, a little bit weaker, maybe not as thick. The cage opens the normal way that you would open, like, you know, a jar of pickles. Like, the cage, you twist it to the left and then remove it. But that's the same direction that the pump, that the impeller moves. So it's theoretically possible. I don't think it would happen because it secures pretty tightly. It's theoretically possible that over time, the current being pushed in that same direction could loosen the cage on there. With the Vortec, they designed it so that you must turn it to the right, the opposite direction from the propeller spin or the impeller spin, so that you can remove the cage. So, like, you know, little stuff like that, little touches. There's some kind of high durability. Somebody told me the crazy name of the plastic that they suspect was used for the rod that goes down the center of the impeller shaft. And Ecotech uses ceramic, for instance. So ceramic is generally accepted to be a, you know, it's going to give you more longevity than even this, like, high durability plastic. So, you know, little things like that. And by the way, because I try to be dead honest with you guys about everything, the fact that Jabal does not offer just the wet side yet is a little bit concerning. Now, I've confirmed, because people have sent me video and confirmed it to me, that the MP10 wet side works with the DMP20 dry side. And the MP40 wet side works with the DMP40 dry side. So you can buy Ecotech components to replace your wet side if the wet side... So you can buy Ecotech wet sides to replace your failed DMP wet side if they fail. And I mean, everything fails in saltwater, so eventually they will. But you don't want to do that. I mean, I don't want to do that. First of all, I don't want to give them any more money ever again. I'm sure I will, but I don't want to. But really, I like the notion of, like, having the component that's designed for the other component working together. Again, it must be stated that, I mean, a DMP20 is, like, barely more expensive than an MP40 wet side. I mean, it's ridiculous how cheap these wave makers are. But that being stated, I still would like the option to buy a wet side. So we're really early in the product launch. They might not have even known if this would be a popular product. I assume that it is a popular product. Telegram posted today that some shop or operation or person or whatever, he doesn't know who, I don't think, somebody's bought the entire wholesale stock of the DMP from Jabal in the United States. Somebody has bought the whole stock. So, I mean, clearly there's a demand and people see opportunity here, right? I think that it's probably a reasonable bet that once they realize just how popular this is, they're going to be like, okay, well, let's really pay attention to it then. And there's probably a fair chance that at some point we see a wet side just sold as a wet side and that's it. I don't know anybody there at Jabal. I would not promise that. I have no intel on that. But I will say, like, it would surprise me if they left that money on the table. Because if they leave that money on the table, it just goes to Ecotech, because I don't know how many people are going to be comfortable with the principle of replacing the whole pump when they could get, like, an MP10 or MP40 wet side that fits the dry side and lets the pump function. I mean, they would sacrifice money to Ecotech in the process of not eventually offering that component. So, by the way, it should be just stated before I forget, longevity is the big question mark. It hasn't been out long enough to know. I don't sense any reason to like doubt that it will last. Given the value of it, it will last long enough for you to get definitely your value out of it. But here's something else interesting, kind of wet side related. So another interesting thing is that some people have been experiencing a little bit of trouble with their DMP-10s making some noise. Now, the DMP-10 is the smallest iteration of the DMP. And I have found that the DMP 20, 30, and 40 are essentially silent. I did witness this noise people are referring to when I set up my first DMP-10. And it sounds kind of like a lawnmower in the distance if you don't get the wet side perfectly square to the dry side. So like, brr, brr, you know, you can hear that little like muted rumble or, you know, mild rumble. What I did to fix it was, one, I secured, using the little sticky bracket with the zip tie, I secured the cord really tight so that the dry side unit was super, super flush to the glass. And then I just very gently, very carefully moved that little wet side around until it was perfectly synced and silent, and I got it to be silent. So I think it just requires patience, and I think people are putting it on their tank. They're panicking like, oh my God, I bought a loud pump from China, and then they're posting about it, because I had several people respond. I made a video on it, and I had several people respond and say, yeah, I overreacted. Like, I calmed down, and I got it to work silently. So my guess is because they went out on a limb and made a smaller iteration than the MP10/DMP20, they made this small version for like nano setups. I think that it's the weak point in the overall lineup, because think about it. You can't fit, you know, a very big magnet in there. All the components have, I mean, everything is shrunken down. There's way less room for error. And so you have to really line this thing up properly to get it to work. The DMP-10. The DMP 20, 30, and 40, I barely even try to get them aligned. I just throw them on there and they work and they're quiet every time. So I figured I would throw that, you know, bit of awareness in here for people who have nano tanks and are interested in the DMP 10. The dry side of this unit to me, super solid. Absolutely solid. I think that the dry side spins quieter than... And this has been echoed by people who are longtime Vortec users. I think that the dry side spins quieter and more effectively than the Vortec. I think that somehow it seems like the dry side might be a touch larger than the Vortec dry sides. And I think maybe that, I don't know. I don't know what it could be. Maybe it's that little bit of extra size. I don't know what it could be, but I think that I think it really might be quieter. I have no qualms about it whatsoever. The suction cups on the DMP are interesting, right? If you don't know what I'm referencing, by the way, look up any of my videos on my YouTube channel and of me like unboxing a DMP, and you'll see all these components that I'm discussing. The DMP uses magnets, which I believe are just as strong, from what I can tell from memory, just as strong as the Vortec magnets. However, they added something, and it made the product much more unique, in my opinion, than people are giving it credit for. They added a suction cup cap that is like molded, like injection molded somehow, or casted, because the suction cups individually, there's like four of them on a cap, and the cap goes over, there's a cap that goes over the back of the wet side and over the back of the, or the front of the dry side. The suction cups, there's four that are, you cannot remove them. They are part of the cap. The cap itself, this like rubberized plastic composite cap, goes over the dry side where the magnet is, and it's adhered to it with some adhesive. On the wet side, it is not adhered, so that you can remove it and then unscrew the wet side to maintenance it. But these suction cups basically solve the problem of like kids banging their head into the dry side of the Vortec when they run by, or people in a fish store brushing it with their hip when they walk by a frag tank or whatever. I mean, these suction cups are strong. Trust me, I have to yank on this thing to get it off of my tank. I mean, I hesitate to say it because I hate things being half done by companies, but I'd almost take a little bit weaker suction cup-ism, or whatever you want to call that, suction capability. I would maybe take a little less because they are so, those suction cups are so good at what they do. And people have worried about, oh, well, will the suction cups get firm and not work so well on the wet side? I don't think it matters. The magnets are fine. The magnets are going to hold the wet side in place on the inner portion of the glass. Who cares if those suction cups get hard over time because of saltwater exposure? Just put the cap on with the stiff suction cups and match it up, and the magnets will hold it in place. What I care about, maybe you guys are different, what I care about is the dry side. And the dry side is going to be dry. Those suction cups, as heavy duty as they are, I don't see how they could just like fail over time. I mean, they're so, you have to like hold it and play with the suction cup cap to understand what I'm saying, or really watch my videos closely to see. But just the way they made these things was very thoughtful. So I'm super happy with that development. The cord, in my opinion, is not quite long enough for my liking. So I did find a Higer cord, an extension cord. It's for like $14, you can get like 10 feet of extension cord that works perfectly with the DMP 30 and 40, the larger models. I'm still looking for extension cordage for the smaller models. I don't think people will need them as much for the smaller models because those will probably be on smaller tanks overall. But yeah, you can get cord that works, especially for the larger models. And J-Bow did choose to go with, they did choose to go with their universal control box. And the downside, the upside is that the universal control box works really well. It connects to Bluetooth really well. You know, buttons are clicky and fine. It comes with a bracket. That's cool. It does not have a DC hookup for battery backup. But my solution to that, which I, you know, made videos about on my channel again, is to go with EcoFlow's product line of UPS style or UPS functionality lithium iron phosphate battery backup units. You can pair cost effectively those units via AC connection, just plug and play with the DMP units, and I think get better value than you can with the Vortec battery backup, and certainly more value than you can get with the Vortec WaveMaker itself. So yeah, I would highly suggest going that route for battery backup if you guys are looking for that. The app is an interesting deal. So the app, the J-Bow Aqua app, which is what you connect via Bluetooth, it's what you connect with to control and program the pumps. It works, but it's quirky. So there are, and it's so tedious. I won't do it here. I have a video guide to it that you can look at if you want, but it's just goofy. Some of the functionality of the app is just like, you know, you have to like long press your way through everything. Sometimes you have to close a window and open it back up to like activate a different mode. Initially, random mode in the app did not have the ability to adjust the maximum flow, which is bad news for me because I'm a random mode guy. So I actually emailed J-Bow. Didn't expect a response. I was astounded to get a response, and they fully understood what I was getting at and confirmed what I wanted. And then within like a week, they had this implemented. Less than a week, they had added random mode adjustment for intensity to their app, which is, you know, it's always funny to me. People just assume that like these Chinese companies or just any company outside of the United States or like, you know, Europe, they're not going to do anything for me. If I go with them, nobody's ever going to help me. Nobody cares about me. If it breaks, I just have to buy a new one. That is another, like, I think, by American companies, that's another, like, mythological piece of BS. Like, it's a different kind of mythos, you know? It's a different kind of, it's like an assumptive mythos, but it's a different thing entirely than what I talked about earlier, but it's a thing where people are like, I'm literally on an island by myself if I buy this product. I reached out to Jabal. They got back to me the next day, and in less than a week, they had implemented a whole new feature on the app. So to me, that kind of breaks down the whole like assumption that they don't care. They're never going to work with anybody. You know, they're not just a phone call away like the guys in Pennsylvania at Ecotech. I mean, an email away is not much worse than a phone call away. Maybe to some people who are bad at typing. I don't know. But I was pretty impressed by that. I was actually very impressed that they came to the table and were so swift to go out there and design this feature and implement it. That was really cool to see. Gave me a lot of confidence in utilizing these products. So, yeah, the app, I'm sure, could use some work. Whether we'll get, like, you know, major overhaul work or not, I don't know. But the app does work. You can program pumps. You can activate different modes. You can adjust the flow intensity in different modes. The app is functional. And that's pretty important because I think a lot of people now are just like aquarium app heavy. I know I am. I don't want to mess with a control box. I want that thing to live in the darkness underneath my cabinet and never have to touch it again. I just want to pull out my phone, tap an app, and be able to do what I want to do. And I can say that that can be achieved with the DMP now. After they updated random mode, I am happy camper. I have what I wanted. I'll also say, so there's on some models, not all of mine have been this way. I think only the 30 and the 40 have been this way. They send you an adapter, a little cheap white Happy Meal toy adapter to plug into American outlets. Guys, I'll post on Instagram. I bought the same spec of power cord that goes into the power brick for those units and bought one with just a Native American plug point on it. I don't want to use those little cheap adapters, and the cost of the cost of these cords that I bought on Amazon, I forget exactly, but it's like whatever, 7, 8, 9 bucks or something, maybe less. So yeah, you have all the opportunity in the world to just buy a little length of adapter cord that goes into your wall outlet or into your EcoFlow or your Apex EB832 or whatever. You can totally do that. So, trying to think of anything else about it. I know this is kind of a brief overview. I've spent so much time deep diving on them. Flow is basically identical to a Vortec. It's a real narrow flow pattern. Real narrow. I did a flow video that you can look at. So much of this, I keep saying, I did a video, because I've put out so many videos on it, and I've focused on it for so long. I know I feel like I'm shortchanging you guys on the podcast, but I want to give you the broad strokes. And really, the broad strokes to tie this all up is this. For the value, for the price point, the DMP gives you 90% plus of what a Vortec gives you. Seriously. It's like 90% of what you get with a Vortec when it's all taken together. Yeah, maybe some cheaper components. Yeah, maybe a little less thought about which direction the cage turns. Yeah, you don't right now at least have a wet side that you can replace it with. That's why I knocked 10% off. But everything else, the aggregate of this equation, I'm looking at this like, people have to be out of their gourds if they are going to spend Ecotech Aperture prices on this style of magnetic aquarium pump. And I think that the DMP, I think that this is the moment that Aperture is going to have to really reevaluate, like, what are we doing here? And I don't know if the powers that be, these, you know, wealthy and powerful venture capitalists behind them, I don't know if they're going to allow them to have that thought at all. If they do, it might just get slapped right back into their brain by these powerful people above them. You know, I mean, for all I know, it might be that, you know, the CEO of or president or whatever of Aperture is going to her overlords and being like, we really desperately need to innovate, like right now. Like we have unprecedented competition. We have exhausted all of our means to keep it, you know, contained, and we're watching sales tumble. And she just might be like, they just might look at her and be like, no, you're not doing anything that is going to, we're not investing more. Like there's no more that you can put toward any of this stuff. I have no idea. I don't know how that relationship works. It's all just shots in the dark. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, because if they don't respond and start giving Reef Keepers actual respect and better value in the products that they're offering, and stop raising prices endlessly, and stop, you know, refusing to fix Mobius, and all these, I could just go on and list. If they don't stop and start making, you know, meaningful inroads and progress on their lineup, I mean, it's all just, they're living on borrowed time. I mean, it's just like, more and more people realize the myth is not real. They realize it's just a myth every year, and they just will exist on borrowed time. You know, that's my position now. My position after sitting with it for a while, obviously tons of people still buy their products. And by the way, I'm not saying that, like, you know, I've had great customer service from them at times. I've also had really bad customer service from them. I'm not saying that nothing about them is redeemable in any way. And I'm not saying there aren't good people who work there. I'm sure there are. But for the American, like, for the preeminent force in American reef keeping to regain its, like, respect and an ability to actually, like, grow and loop in some reef keepers again who pay any attention at all, which they might not care about. They might just snap up the newbies and take all their cash, and that's all they want to ever do. And that's why the things are the way they are, and their marketing budget is what it is. But if they ever want real respect from the rest of us who are not bought by them and who pay attention, and they ever want us to come and bring our money back to their door willingly again, they're going to have to try again. And that's just the bottom line. And that right there is like where we're at now in the story of the magnetic return pump. We are at an absolute turning point in the story of it. And it's not that long of a story. It sure is a much more fascinating story than I had originally anticipated when I started looking into Mervyn F. Roberts. Like, you know, before that moment, I thought, oh yeah, you know, whatever, the Vortec guys invented it, and now somebody's trying to, you know, rip them off or whatever. It's not really what's happening. The DMP is a different beast than, I mean, it's different enough. In essence, it functions the same. It does the same thing. It has the same goal, moving water in your aquarium. But there are definite differences about it and its functionality, or its feature set, I should say. And the whole story of what led to the, you know, what led us to this point has just expanded exponentially with me learning about what actually came before Ecotec. And, you know, I'm not calling people out here, but it's such a deep fallacy, such a false mythos, that literally, like, Richard Ross and Ben Johnson on the last Reef Beef were talking about the DMP and the whole thing. And Richard Ross was like, yeah, well, when they were inventing the Vortec, like, unless I misheard him, but I'm pretty sure he said that. And by the way, again, I forgive people for thinking that forever, because unless you go digging, you're not going to know about Mervyn F. Roberts and the incredible story behind the true origin of the magnetic aquarium pump. You're not going to know that. It's Richard Ross. And like, you know, when Richard Ross says that, people are going to believe that. So I'm not like trying to come out here and be like, Richard Ross, you're wrong. I'm correcting you. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying that this is such a deep mythos that has been built into the hobby that all of us, including like Richard Ross, just take it for what it is. They're just like, yeah, this is it. This is just reality. And it's not, it's a false mythos behind them. And I'm trying to break that down. I'm trying to break the trance that people have when it comes to these entities, like this family of entities that is not out there for the common good of the reef keeping hobby. I just don't believe it. I patently don't believe it. And I think that this story exposes that. It illustrates it, I should say, quite well. So, all right, I'm tapped. That was a lot of talking. I actually have a slight headache, so I'm sorry if like I started slurring or stumbling there in the last 30 minutes. I started getting a headache at some point. Even I, at some point, get tired of hearing my own voice, which, you know, as a teacher, you guys might not believe that. You might say I'm BS. Teachers can listen to their own voice all day. I would normally agree, but today, I'm tapped. I've gone for nonstop for like an hour and 40 minutes. So, anyhow, I hope you guys enjoyed listening to the true story, the full story of the magnetic aquarium pump. And like I said at the beginning, I will earnestly try to carve out time to make new episodes of this. But from now on, when I come into these podcast episodes, I want to be quite prepared. Especially if it's about a certain topic matter. If I'm just talking at you about reef keeping in general, what's going on with my tank or whatever, or thoughts I have on certain methodologies, or I can do that just off the cuff. But I feel like in the future, I'm going to try when I have like a set subject matter like this that requires some depth and some thought. I think I'm going to roll prepared, and hopefully it showed that I've thought this through more. That doesn't mean I don't stumble over my words sometimes and stuff like that, but I hope you could see that, you know, my thoughts on this were more organized, certainly, than the reactionary episode to the DMP coming out that I previously had. So, all right. Take it easy, guys. Stay safe out there. Work hard. Get your tank maintenance done. Don't sleep on it. And I'm not going to stop on the DMP. And to be honest with you, I've got some other products that I have ordered that I think are going to shed some more light for people on some fallacies that we have going on in this hobby and some preconceived notions that aren't true. And they're on their way. And I'm going all out. So you can bank on more content in some form or another, basically consistently coming from me for the foreseeable forever. So I love doing what I do in this hobby. It means a lot to me. Take it easy, guys. Have a good one.